The podcasts of the WDWNT Network are made possible each and every week by the following fantastic sponsors. Magical Travel is an authorized Disney vacation planner and is always ready to assist you in making your next trip to the Walt Disney World Resort, Disneyland Resort, or aboard the Disney Cruise Line even more magical. You book a trip to the Walt Disney World Resort before March 27th for select dates between April 28th and October 1st, 2011. You could save up to 40% off normal Walt Disney World Resort hotel rates. For more information on this special offer and many more, visit MagicalTravel.com and book your next Disney trip today. Resales DVC is your home for Disney Vacation Club resales. Whether you're buying or selling your part in the Disney Vacation Club, Resales DVC is prepared to walk you step-by-step through the process and make sure your experience is as pleasant as possible. For pricing, availability, and more information, be sure to contact Grandma Jackie and Kin at www.resalesdvc.com or by phone at 866-544-2919 to make your vacation dreams come true.
I'm not sponging for rum. It be gold I'm after.
Zippity-doo-dah, zippity-hey.
There's no turning back now.
Like a grand and miraculous spaceship, our planet has sailed through the universe of time.
Put up 2, 5, and 7.
Gorgeous, yeah!
Look at the guy in the goofy mask.
That's not a mask.
Sorry, lady.
I'm sure to do better next time. It was my first flight, and I'm still getting used to my programming.
You made it. I knew you would.
Hi, hello, and welcome.
Welcome to our show.
Please welcome your host, Tom Corliss.
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to another edition of the WDWNT podcast. This is episode 185 for March 14th, 2011. On this week's show, we have the third installment of our countdown of the 40 biggest moments in the history of Walt Disney World, as voted by you. We continue this series by discussing the placement of moments numbers 32, 31, and 30 on the list. All this and much more Walt Disney World information and fun awaits you this week on the WDW News Today podcast.
Brandon, I gotta say, these past 6 months since you quit WDWNT have just been absolutely wonderful. No more late night Skype calls, no more trips to the park to take pictures of construction walls, no more playing through hours of horrible music for your super obscure show. It's been wonderful having my husband back.
It just has been great. I wouldn't trade it for the world. Hold on a sec. It's Tom? Hello? What's that? Are you kidding? I'd love to.
What was that?
Well, you see.
Brandon Richard Struve, don't tell me that you...
Honey, I'm doing SOS again. That's right, folks. Catch an all-new season of SOS starting March 5th. Listen to shows daily right here on WDW Entunes at 10 a.m. and 10 p.m. Now, if you'll excuse me, I've got a bit of a problem to deal with. Enjoy the show.
We know what our goals are, we know what we hope to accomplish, and believe me, it's the most exciting and challenging assignment we've ever tackled at Walt Disney Productions.
Mm-hmm.
In honor of the historic 40th anniversary of the Walt Disney World Resort, the WDW News Today podcast is proud to present a list 4 decades in the making. The 40 biggest moments in the history of Walt Disney World, as voted by you. Please welcome your host for this epic countdown, Tom Corliss.
Thank you, Brian, and welcome to again to the 40 biggest moments in the history of Walt Disney World, where we continue our epic countdown of the 40 biggest moments in the history of the Walt Disney World Resort. Joining me for the segment, Mr. Anthony Iacullo.
Hey, everyone.
Jason Diffendahl.
Hey, howdy, hey.
And Zach Larson.
Jumbo, everyone.
All right, we've already counted down moments number 40 through 33 on the show. Tonight we have moments numbers 32, 31, and 30 to talk about, and obviously we're shortening the segment a bit as far as number of moments, as they do get bigger as we go down the list of the 40 biggest moments. So let's not waste any time. As usual, we will read off the results, we'll comment, talk about what the moment was, we'll discuss it a bit, and then we'll discuss maybe where we ranked it. So could I have that drum roll, please? Moment number 32. That was awful. Moment number 32. Walt Disney.
Then you do it next time.
I can't. I'm hosting. Moment number 32. Walt Disney World marks 50 years of Disney theme park magic with the happiest celebration on Earth.
Yay!
The longest moment title on Earth. Well, let's give you a little background on this, on moment number 32. On May 5th, 2005, or 5505 as it was marketed to us for many, 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 many months, Walt Disney World began an 18-month-long happiest celebration on Earth, a global salute to commemorate 50 years of magic at the Disney theme parks worldwide. The following shows and attractions had their official opening grand openings in honor of the celebration. We'll read you those now. There was, I was hoping to never talk about this again on the show, but Cinderellabration, located at the Magic Kingdom on the Castle Forecourt stage, a live musical stage show in which Cinderella is crowned a princess during a dazzling coronation pageant attended by Disney's most beloved princesses. Also unofficially opened March 17th, so almost exactly 6 years ago. Lights, Motors, Action, Extreme Stunt Show, located at the then Disney MGM Studios at the Streets of America, a high-octane live stunt show featuring specially designed cars, motorcycles, and jet skis with spectacular special effects. Again, unofficially opened almost exactly 6 years ago on March 14, 2005. And then there was Soarin', located at the Land Pavilion in Future World at Epcot, where guests receive a bird's-eye view of the rich landscape and topography of California through a thrilling simulated hang gliding elevator. This is great. In the press release, it said a thrilling simulated hang gliding, and then in parentheses, elevated theater seats, journey over the Golden State. And that, of course, unofficially opened on May 1st. I love that. On May 1st, officially opened on May 5th. As well, after a prototype test period in California, Lucky the Dinosaur made his on-stage debut at Walt Disney World in May 2005, kicking off what was a short 3-month visit to the park. He made his first appearance at Disney California Adventure. Lucky had crowds in, as they call it, pre-hysterics. No bones about it. He's one of several high-profile attractions being imported to Walt Disney World. It says here is part of the happiest celebration on Earth. And as well, during the happiest celebration on Earth, Cinderella Castle at the Magic Kingdom became a celebration of Disney magic around the world. Graceful gold filigree would adorn its turrets, banners, ribbons, and tapestries breezing from balconies. Incredible golden Disney icons sparkling across the castle, such as Cinderella's glass slipper, the Beast's enchanted rose, and many other icons. Golden images of Peter Pan and his friends fly carefree in the sky on the tallest spire. And there was a delightfully Disney surprise from every angle. And in the middle of it all, a magical palette of ever-changing stained glass above the castle's great archway, shining with breathtaking views of the 5 Disney castles from around the world. So this here was the happiest celebration on Earth, a fairly big event. What does everybody think of this one?
Well, I have this one listed as number 37 on my list.
That's kind of high.
It's kind of high. I mean, it's not far off from where the listeners ranked it, but it's a little higher because, and I mean, I might be kind of biased in this, but I was out at Disneyland for the happiest celebration on Earth.
Happiest homecoming on Earth.
The happiest homecoming on Earth. And so I kind of think that the happiest celebration on Earth at Walt Disney World was really, it was sort of a celebration that was just stealing the reason for a celebration from Disneyland. I mean, it was Disneyland's 50th anniversary. It was Disney World's, you know, 34th anniversary. I mean, like, what the heck is that? So, yeah, they got Soarin', which was great. They got Lucky. I actually saw Lucky. I was one of the lucky ones to see Lucky. Lucky was cool for the first, you know, prototype of these walk-around animatronics. You know, Cinderella Bration was useless. The castle... The castle decorations were, I thought, really cool. I don't know whether I liked the magic mirror thing in the front because it was just too big and oversized, but yeah, the decorations, the little golden things on the castle were really cool. You know, I don't really know that you can count Everest as part of this. Yeah, it opened in that year, but it's, yeah, it has nothing to do with it.
Well, we didn't mention it, but it was on those banners. They had four themed banners.
Well, and so was Lights, yeah, Motors Action, and that really had nothing to do with it either. So, you know, these
Well, the idea was that they imported stuff from the parks around the world.
Sure.
Cinderella Bration was very popular at Tokyo Disneyland. And
yeah, so was Duffy.
Yeah, that's true. Lights, Motors Action came from Paris, and Soarin' came from California Adventure.
Right. So all that's fine, but it really has nothing to do with Disneyland's 50th anniversary. Mm-hmm. And so that's why, you know, I pushed this further down on my list, is just because, you know, if Disney World wants to have a celebration that's centered around the 40th anniversary, that's fine and great. And I really would like to see that happen. But to have a celebration that really is stealing the thunder from Disneyland, I don't think is quite fair. And so, you know, I would, like I said, I was at Disneyland for the 50th. I thought it was phenomenal. I really liked what they had done out there, you know, in preparation for that anniversary. You know, there was a lot of quickly put in place renovations and upgrades. And
yeah, they just had a management change in 2003, which
that's right,
was often remarked as the turnaround for that entire resort.
And it certainly was. You know, and Matt Wimé, who came in, had only like 18 months to put this celebration together and did a fantastic job. Unbelievable job, not only for the celebration itself, but how much of Disneyland he got in really good looking shape compared to what it had been 2 years earlier.
Yeah, remember they completely rebuilt the Tiki Room. They added new stuff at the Jungle Cruise, at the Haunted Mansion. There was... they had spent a ton of money going into May 5th, 2005.
In a very short period of time.
Yeah, they just opened the wallet and dropped everything out.
So I mean, while true Disney World got some cool new stuff, the idea for the celebration, I think, was sort of flawed. And so that's why I put it low. I do like all the new additions except for Cinderella Celebration.
You but like Lights, Motors, Action?
I kind of like it.
Ugh.
I mean, it was better than the Backlot. It was better than what it replaced. Although, if something replaces Lights, Motors, Action, it will probably be better than Lights, Motors, Action. So, you know. If you'd rather look at cars jumping and leaping through flames or the house from the Golden Girls, I'd take the cars.
Honest opinion, Jason? I'd rather go look at the Golden Girls house.
The Golden Girls
watch
house.
That show.
Well, see, but the other thing is, how many of us actually remember watching the Golden Girls?
I still watch the Golden Girls.
Oh, jeez.
I don't even watch it.
Fantastic show.
Oh, my Lord.
Fantastic.
How many of them are dead? Aren't two or three of them
three
dead?
Three of the four have passed away.
Betty White is the
remaining.
Yeah. Surviving.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And it's all within like the last, they were getting way off topic,
yeah,
but it's all within like the last 5 years too.
Well, and I think Blanche was just a couple months.
Right after she was at the Disney Legends induction at the 2009 Expo, and then she passed away shortly after.
Yeah.
So yeah.
Anyway, way off topic.
Way off topic. I don't know how we got to that. But.
You know, I think you kind of get the idea. You know, like I said, no ill feelings against anything that had to do with the celebration. I just think the concept for it was kind of, you know, cheapen out by stealing it from Disneyland, basically. Mm-hmm. And actually, you know, there were things in this list that were part of this celebration, like Soarin' was one of the things that the audience ranked in this list. And in my list, I ranked it much higher than the celebration overall because I think Soarin' taken alone was very important and it really didn't have anything to do with the celebration. So,
yeah,
there you go.
I mean, I totally agree with you, Jason, about the just the whole meaning behind the celebration. I mean, it's great that they brought all this stuff to the resort, but you know, in the grand scheme of things, there wasn't, you know, a specific reason to have it at the Magic Kingdom or at Walt Disney World Resort. I mean, it makes sense that they're kind of piggybacking off the Disneyland Resort's 50th anniversary. And as far as the attractions are concerned, you know, like Lights, Motors, Action, it's not bad. It's I kind of refer to this as like the Fear Factor Live of the Walt Disney World Resort. I kind of get the same feel when I see this show.
Although it's not maybe, quite as seasonal. As
not quite as seasonal, no. Yeah. They may do only like one or two shows a day, but still, you know, they do them every day.
Yeah.
But, you know, Lights, Motors, Action is one of those, you know, once a year kind of things. And that's when, you know, Star Tours is still under refurbishment.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Soarin', that, you know, helped kind of, I think, save the land pavilion. Didn't Turtle Talk with Crush also open during this time?
04. It was
just before that.
Packaged
okay.
in, but yeah, it okay. was before.
Cinderella Bration, I never saw, and I don't really feel I missed anything.
You are a lucky man.
Well, I was living in California at the time. And so, I mean, it was a good excuse to kind of celebrate adding all these new attractions, but like Jason said, the reasoning behind the celebration just seemed a little forced over here on the East Coast, and that's why I put it at a little higher than he did, but number 29.
See, I put it much lower, higher or lower, depending on how you want to say it.
Yeah,
have it at 37th. Really, the only benefit we got out of it was Soarin'. Cinderella Bration, meh. Lights, Motors, Action, especially meh. and as Jason said, you know, it was really sort of taking away from Disneyland's 50th. I sort of feel like it should have been a Disneyland-only kind of thing, but...
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, this really sort of was the start of the abomination of the worldwide, or at least bi-coastal marketing campaigns like the Year of a Million Dreams and stuff.
Yeah.
So, you know, most people think that was a poor idea. And although these weren't called the same identical thing, it was close enough. And it really was the genesis of that idea. And yeah. So that's, you know, you can also blame that on the happiest celebration on Earth, too.
I don't know. I'll say where I have. I have this way down at number 25. The reasoning for that is, and you made Jason and Anthony made an excellent point about it detracting from Disneyland. I'll tell you a little story. At the time, I had never been to Disneyland before, and we knew the 50th was coming up, and we were discussing, are we going to go to Disneyland? Do we finally want to go? It's the 50th. It's a big deal. And we looked at the list of stuff that Disneyland was getting. Buzz Lightyear's Astro Blasters. Don't we have that? Yep, we have that. Okay. Don't look at that. They're getting a parade at that other park. Okay. Block Party I would enjoy years later, however. So, in its defense. And really, you looked at Disneyland, and quite frankly, what we saw was a new parade and new fireworks. Not that they all weren't exceptional additions, but on paper and through the announcements, you know, and then Walt Disney World comes out with this press release and says, we're opening Soarin' and this show and that show, and there's a walking dinosaur, and then Everest is coming, and we're decorating the castle, and here's a commercial that's going to play every 5 minutes on ABC. And that's why we decided, well, it looks like Florida's doing a lot more for the 50th anniversary. Let's just keep going there. And that's
poor Disneyland sitting there going, hi, it's my birthday, come love me.
We got blasters.
There was 50 candles, but Florida took a bunch of them.
Mm-hmm. So, and all the stained glass windows.
From a marketing standpoint, Florida did get most of the publicity, if not all of it. The ads that were on TV focused on Walt Disney World. They did not focus on Disneyland. They just said the happiest celebration on Earth, celebrating 50 years of theme parks. And if you happen to live in California or out west, you got the more Disneyland-centric ads. But they just kept them coming on the East Coast. You know, there was not only was there the first one with Walt, and then there was the one with all the characters traveling to Walt Disney World in the end. And then there was the one where they're plopping the one of my favorite commercials, if not favorite commercial ever, is the one where they plop the attractions down as the characters are sort of dreaming out in a field. Soarin' crashes, and then Lights, Motors, Action falls down, and then Cinderella Celebration. And again, it was a very big deal for Walt Disney World. And, you know, the decorations were fantastic. I stand by that they should have kept the 50th decorations on Cinderella Castle. I don't think it has ever looked as good as it looked during the happiest celebration on Earth.
I absolutely agree. Except for the magic mirror, they could have kept everything.
They could have turned it to LCD, which that technology kind of became big right after that. So they probably could have made a flat one that was just a screen, and it would have looked great.
Yeah, I actually think that detracted from the castle overall. So I liked it when they got rid of it. But I liked all the other decorations in which they would have stayed.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't think I ever got to see Cinderella's castle with those decorations with my own two eyes. But looking at pictures of it, it's definitely the best the castle's ever looked besides its normal condition.
And it's going to be very tough when they have their own anniversary at some point in the future and decorate that castle again to top what they did for that event, because it really did look very, very nice and very.
Just going to gold plate the whole thing.
Yeah, just paint the whole thing gold. Sun hits it, everyone goes blind. That's what they're going to do. I mean, beyond that, they probably would have received all of the attractions we talk about. I tend to think the only attraction that got wedged in here that wasn't was Cinderella Celebration. I think they were planning on building Lights, Motors, Action and Soarin' around the same time, because you got to remember, California Adventure and Studios Paris opened very similar time frame. So if you're gonna, you know, if you see they're popular there and you're gonna clone them, they obviously were thinking about it in the same time frame. So they ended up being built simultaneously. Cinderella Celebration, I think they just said, well, Magic Kingdom needs something from the other parks. What could we quickly shoehorn in? For some reason, people in Tokyo can deal with a show like Cinderella Celebration where nothing happens. And that's why we got Cinderella Celebration. And very slowly, it got horrible reviews. Not because it was, you know, it was exactly what it says it is, a coronation ceremony for Cinderella. But you expect there to be some sort of turmoil or, you know, something to happen along the lines of story in this show. And it just never happened. I remember standing there and turning to people with me and going, did it just end with nothing happening?
Well, you know, I think part of the problem is that in Tokyo, this was a nighttime show.
Yeah.
And the lighting had a lot to do with it. Mm-hmm. And in Florida, they ran it during the day. And
we had nighttime shows with the new, you know, we built that new stage, which was very nice and really worked with the castle. And it did have nighttime lighting and it looked nice, but it still wasn't, people still didn't grab on to this show.
Well, and it could be because too many people saw it during the day and didn't like it. The people that saw it at night might have liked it.
Yeah. But they do nighttime lighting for things like, I'm trying to think of, Dream Along with Mickey. They've done during the Pirate and Princess parties, and it has nighttime lighting. And, you know, I think we've seen that before. That's not necessarily anything new. And Celebrate the Season and shows like that have been at night, you know, since those parties began.
I mean, I kind of think that part of it might have something to do with just the demographic that, you know, is or I guess the populace that's viewing it, because the Japanese, you know, public, they're very much into the entertainment aspect of theme parks, both, you know, not only with Tokyo Disneyland, but I mean, also Universal Studios in Japan. They're big on shows. And you know, you guys have discussed on the show in the past that the Japanese public is a lot more respectful and towards theme parks. And what I'm trying to get at is that the American theme park going public, they expect something to go wrong. And when they see a show that's all fluff and, you know, this is great. Oh, this is a wonderful coronation. Wait, where nothing's blowing up. I don't see any bing, bang, boom. I don't see any Captain Hook swinging in. And
I think what's always been nice about the entertainment here, I mean, even like a show like Fantasmic, it's a balance of something for everyone. I guarantee you that little girls that enjoy the Disney princesses went and saw Cinderella Bration and had a wonderful time. Mm-hmm. I think the problem is everyone else did not. There needs to be, if you devote 3 minutes to a princess segment and then 3 minutes to a pirate segment like Dream Along with Mickey, everyone seems to have a good time because, again, there's a little something for everyone in there.
Yeah, it's not a show for everyone like Dream Along with Mickey. As you said, there's something for everyone in that show. It's not just a coronation, you know, for little girls and their moms to enjoy. It's accessible to everybody and something anybody, whether you're a Disney theme park fan or not, could enjoy.
And I did think it was kind of strange that the coronation was for one of the oldest Disney princesses.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it makes sense considering it's Cinderella's castle, but that little aspect of it I thought was kind of strange.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I could see that. Where, you know, she's getting coronated several times a day. That could be weird.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And that music, oh man, the music. Music was very nice, but the show seemed to perform a little more often than the other stage shows have. I think because this was the first time they really made a big deal about a castle stage show, by the way. Castle stage shows were usually briefly mentioned. Oh, by the way, we've added Cinderella Surprise Celebration this year. They were always in like that end line of the press releases or the commercials, or they weren't mentioned at all. This one was the first time they really, you know, this show was mentioned along with Soarin'. And they got about the same airtime at that. So this had a lot of pushing, a lot of publicity for what was essentially the blandest of the castle stage show. So there was a lot of pressure, you know, on the show. Maybe because Dream Along with Mickey never really even got announced. Maybe that's why it's been, you know, so much better received. Although I personally think it's a much, much better show, but it's possible that's a part of it. They built up expectations that show could possibly not deliver on.
I mean, I think the animated character heads alone make it a better show.
Mm-hmm.
Just, you know, that step ahead in technology alone makes it better than any other stage show I've seen in Magic Kingdom.
Well, then guests got to see the Fab Five, which they did not in Cinderella Bration.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, Cinderella Bration was strictly the princess characters. And that's it. Anything else to be said about the happiest celebration on Earth?
Kind of sorry I missed it, but oh well.
Oh well.
Most of it's still around.
Yes, most of it is. And thankfully, the one really bad part is gone. So. All right, I think we can move on to moment number 31. Drum roll. Big Thunder Mountain Railroad opens at the Magic Kingdom.
Woo!
Hey, where are the women?
Big Thunder. Never mind.
There were none inside.
Someone else knows that song.
Yes.
And of course, Big Thunder Mountain opened on November 15th, 1980, after many years of delay. At first, it was a smaller part of the Thunder Mesa / Western River Expedition project meant for Phase 1 of Walt Disney World, which would have fallen between 1971 and 1975. With the oil crisis and other factors to blame, that project was canceled, and the runaway mine train portion was built alone, first at Disneyland and then quickly approved for Walt Disney World for a part of the land meant for the Western River Expedition. If you really want to know more about the history of Big Thunder Mountain, rather than us spend a tremendous amount of time on the history aspect, we spent several hours on Big Thunder Mountain back on episode 170 in a Back to the Future segment. So if you really want the complete uncut history, that's where you need to go. But we will talk about the historical significance in overall Walt Disney World in this segment. So whoever wants to go right ahead.
So I had this on my list at number 34. So very, very close to where the listeners ranked it. I'd say within the margin of error of this survey anyways. And, you know, we did talk about Big Thunder Mountain for hours and hours and hours not too long ago, so I'm not going to go on about it. But Big Thunder Mountain is really, I think, a ride that embodies what Walt wanted when he was designing Disneyland, because it's a roller coaster, sure, but it really is a roller coaster that almost the whole family can go on. It's not a thrill ride. It's a roller coaster, but it's a relatively tame one that's still a lot of fun for adults while being tame enough for most kids who are tall enough to ride. So, you know, it really is a classic Disney attraction. You know, Big Thunder Mountain has been replicated around the world, and so, you know, it's quite classic. If they've put it into all the different Magic Kingdoms,
four out of five, five.
Yeah. So, I think it really is one of the. I mean, it, you know, people list like Haunted Mansion and Pirates as the e-tickets. Big Thunder Mountain is kind of an e-ticket. It's not the upper echelon of classic Disney attractions, but it's probably very close to that upper echelon of classic Disney attractions, I would say.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I put it 34 because I sort of had a philosophy of how I was ranking things, and individual attractions got ranked a little bit lower on my list than other events. But still, I really like Big Thunder Mountain. It was probably one of my first roller coasters, you know, when I was 5 years old or something. Mm-hmm. So, it has a place in my heart.
Mm-hmm. And I'm totally with you on that one, Jason. Because aside from a really, well, in retrospect, lame roller coaster at Paul Bunyan Land in Brainerd, Minnesota, Big Thunder Mountain Railroad, Big Thunder Mountain Railroad was the first roller coaster that I ever rode, and you know, and it remains to this day one of my favorite rides at the Magic Kingdom. So, I because of that reason, I put it a little higher. I put it actually at number 25 on my list. But like, I mean, there's not a whole lot of reason to go into about why the ride is so fun, because again, you just listen to the segment that you guys did a couple months ago. So yeah, number 25.
I'm actually going to put my ranking at number 27. There's no reason to rehash what we said in the Back to the Future segment. Very fun coaster, one of my favorites at Walt Disney World.
And whatever you do, don't look up Paul Bunyan Land online.
Yeah, it doesn't exist anymore.
Yeah, we'll talk about that after we finish the segment.
Yeah.
Anywho, Big Thunder Mountain, I have it slightly higher at number 33 or lower, whatever. We always get confused in this segment. Number 33. It is historically significant, absolutely without a doubt. I don't know if it is in the upper echelon of classic Disney attractions. I don't know if it's quite as important as a majority of the attractions on this list. I've always felt it's sort of lagging compared to even the other thrill rides. You know, it always gets lost in the shuffle, whether it's the Magic Kingdom or Disneyland, or it's always the one that sort of falls to the back behind, certainly at the Magic Kingdom behind Splash and Space Mountain. But again, a very fun ride and very historically significant at the time that land was saved for Western River Expedition. People had been waiting and waiting and waiting for something to happen there, and eventually part of it did get built, and it was a very nice part of it that did get built and helped the capacity of a strained Magic Kingdom after 5 years without a new attraction at the time. So I think for that reason alone, it has earned a spot in the top 40 moments. Anything else to be said about Big Thunder Mountain Railroad before we make it the shortest talked about moment?
Raven Goat.
Jeez.
That's my new ringtone.
Well, let's just get to number 30 because I'm sure you guys are going to talk about this for an hour. Drum roll. Illuminations, Reflections of Earth debuts at Epcot.
Yay!
Woo!
Yay!
Okay, let me talk about it. Illuminations Reflections of Earth premiered on October 1st, 1999 as Illuminations 2000 Reflections of Earth as part of the Walt Disney World Millennium Celebration. It was so successful that after the celebration ended, the 2000 was dropped from the name, and the show was continued. The show utilizes fireworks, pyrotechnics, laser lights, fountains, and fires to create a visual production on the park's World Showcase Lagoon. And I was going to list all other kinds of factoids, but I'm pretty sure everyone else in the segment will probably do it for us. So go right ahead, everybody.
Well, I'm not going to list factoids, but
talk
I think
enough about it.
We talked about Illuminations quite a bit back in the first installation of this segment, where we talked about the 25th anniversary of Epcot. So if you want my viewpoint on Illuminations, you can go back to that.
Well, that was the
episode.
We're talking about the
well, yeah, but we talked about the show.
One.
We talked about the show itself quite a bit. But at any rate, Illuminations. Illuminations overall is one of the longest running shows at any park.
Maybe just behind Fantasy in the Sky.
Probably at this point, probably you're right. So to me, it's one of the best nighttime shows if you get rid of the 10-minute segment in the middle that's boring. But that 10-minute break gives you time to run to the potty or something. Go get a margarita or something. But Illuminations, I think, is a phenomenal show. Absolutely phenomenal. And, you know, it used to be good. And when Reflections of Earth debuted, it turned into something that was astounding. And the fact that it's lasted essentially unchanged since 1999, I think, is a testament to how good it is. And how much people like it that they still show up night after night after night. I mean, remember, they didn't have to change Illuminations to run only two nights a week in order to pack World Showcase every night to see the show. And I think that says something.
Mm-hmm. Well, I'm pretty sure Fantasmic could fill that theater every night.
It probably could. But for whatever reason... Yep. It only fills it two nights a week.
Well, Illuminations doesn't have any live actors, which is certainly helpful.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Well, that's right. And so that's a different problem. But I think one of the things that's amazing about Illuminations is just how close in proximity you are to the fireworks. Mm-hmm. There are all kinds of fireworks that the single shots from the banks of the lagoon sometimes launch, you know, 10, 15 feet in front of you. Mm-hmm. And a lot of the lower level fireworks that are right over top of the water are very close. So it is a fireworks show that's quite unique in the fact that it's probably the single show where you are as close to the fireworks as you could possibly safely be.
Yeah, as far as altitude, most definitely, because a majority of the shells, if not almost all of them, are close to eye level.
Yeah, right. Yeah. So that's number one. Number two is sort of related, the Inferno Barge, which is probably about as close as you're going to ever be to a conflagration of epic proportions, where you can really feel the heat.
Yeah, and that's what World of Color kind of ripped that off and put these little ones, and they're closer. Most
they're
definitely closer,
but they're not as big.
No, but I mean, it definitely isn't. I think that is most definitely drawn from Illuminations. It is certainly, I think, that is something they pulled out of that show for World of Color.
And you know, I have no problem with that. I think the flamethrowers are great in World of Color, and they certainly add a unique element to that show, mm-hmm. but... The Inferno Barge it's akin to a tractor trailer full of propane exploding, essentially. And it's just unbelievable. So that's something that you're not going to see anywhere else either. So Illuminations has a lot of unique things going for it. And like I said, the fact that it's been around so long certainly speaks to that, the popularity of the show. So I put it all the way up. Did I say what I put it? I put it all the way up at 16 on my list. Like I said, it does have a little bias in the fact that Epcot's my favorite park and Illuminations is my favorite nighttime show, almost now. But World of Color is very high on that list.
Yep.
I'm actually very much looking forward to going in a couple weeks to see it again. Yep. But anyway, so I like I said before, I had a different sort of philosophy on things, and I put attractions, single attractions, lower on the list, and things like shows and anniversaries and stuff higher on the list. And so this is one of the things that got pushed up higher on my list because it's a show that's lasted quite a long time now. So there you go.
I got to go with Jason. It's having never seen World of Color with my own two eyes, I can't really say that it would definitely be my favorite nighttime spectacular. But of the ones I have seen, Illuminations, Reflections of Earth is my absolute favorite. From a photographer standpoint, it's the most because of the fireworks firing at such a low level, it allows for some really, really cool shots. And in addition to that, it's probably my favorite music from a nighttime spectacular. I think the music for this is better than Fantasmic, without a doubt. That's just my opinion.
Fantasmic, there's something about it. Fantasmic is incredibly strange and corny, mm-hmm. but there is something magical about it. But if you want, this score has been recognized far beyond this park. I mean, ABC right. heard this and has stolen it permanently as the music they use on New Year's Eve. Mm-hmm. So this music is recognized as a spectacular score.
I mean, it says something for the quality of it that, you know, I can have a stressful day and, you know, play Reflections of Earth in my car driving home, and it would totally put my mind at peace, you know. I love that. Anyway, and just the fact that, it remains one of the longest running shows, it's just a testament to how good it is. I mean, maybe it's because they, WDI hasn't maybe put a lot of attention towards, wanting to do a new show because the one they have works so well. I mean, I personally think the show could use a little bit of work. I don't really care for that break in the middle. Yeah. But
they've invested in upgrades. I mean, they updated the Earth Globe just mm-hmm. a few years ago, and they every now and then they still plunk some money into this thing.
Mm-hmm. And another thing is that it has some of the best add-ons that any fireworks show at Walt Disney World has ever had. I didn't get a chance to see the 25th anniversary tag, but the Christmas or the holiday tag they add on it every year is absolutely amazing. Mm-hmm. And just the fact that they're willing to and continue to add these little tags on is just great. So that's why I put this on my list at number 26, just behind Big Thunder Mountain.
You know, Zach, one thing I wanted to mention that you brought up about photography. Mm. A lot of the listeners know that I had my wedding in Walt Disney World back in 2003, and we had an Illuminations dessert party afterwards. And some of the pictures that I have of my wife and I standing on the bridge to the Italy Isola with Illuminations going on in the background are unbelievable pictures. Mm-hmm. And, if you want a wedding picture that people will just look at with their mouths agape, Illuminations will do it. That's for sure.
That's a very good point. Because a lot of people do like to tie, and it is a very romantic idea to tie fireworks in with your wedding. Why not? And Walt Disney World already has them, so you don't have to pay for your own, which is nice too.
Yep.
So I think that's a very good point. That's the one to go with. I don't want to imagine someone's wedding photos with that plastic puppet dragon from Fantasmic in them.
Oh, gosh.
They pull like a quote bubble next to the dragon's head. Congratulations.
Let the memories begin.
Oh, my.
Made out of garbage bags.
One other thing I wanted to mention about Reflections of Earth and is that the great narration that occurs in the beginning of
the
show. Yeah, with Jim Cummings, mm-hmm. also Darkwing Duck. But
let's get fireworks.
But yeah, it's just it's a great little intro. It's like, I hope you enjoyed our story tonight. And it's a great little beginning.
Yeah, everyone does the little, the blowing out the candles.
And then we still can't see the fireworks because there's a gigantic phase in front of us.
Well, it's true. The low level fireworks have also been a problem for mm-hmm. the show, because when it first debuted, some sites were built out of the necessity just to know where the smoke would be that night. Mm-hmm. And it's funny that they didn't learn from that, and then they built California Adventure, and they had Luminaria and things like that, and World of Color had to be developed because of wind, you know, because of the smoke problem with low-level stuff. And Illumination still suffers from that a little bit, but again, I don't think detracts from the show unless you get caught in it.
Yeah, I mean, all it takes is proper preparation and,
just lick your finger, stick it up in the air, and there you go.
Yeah, exactly.
That seems to work. Has anyone been caught in the smoke screen? Because I have not. I have never been caught in the smoke screen.
Yeah, for some reason, I am very lucky, and I think I've been sort of caught in it once. And it's not... What it really does is it detracts from your enjoyment of the show.
Yeah.
I mean, the smoke isn't horrible to deal with, but... it's hard to see a lot of the show, and that's what I find most disappointing.
Because I was going to say, because it looks bad from far away, because you could see some nights just people getting hammered with smoke, and you go, I'm glad we're not standing over there. But I was kind of curious as to how bad it actually is.
I mean, I've got a spot that I like that I've discovered recently that I like to watch the Reflections of Earth from, and that's inside or just on the balcony of the Stave Church in Norway.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you got a slightly elevated position, and I've never had a problem with the smoke, especially in that spot.
Yeah, most times I've seen it blow towards Spaceship Earth, a majority of the time, I would say. But again, I have not seen the show a ton. So.
Mm-hmm.
All right, well, Jason, I'm going to one-up you, and I'm going to put it at number 15.
Oh,
wow. I can't blame you.
Okay. I enjoy the heck out of Reflections of Earth. The music is unbelievable. Next to the Jeremy Irons soundtrack to Spaceship Earth, I think it is one of the best pieces of Disney music.
Mm-hmm.
As Thomas
Jeremy
said,
Jeremy Irons isn't music.
Well, I think he's talking about the score. He's talking about the score from the 94.
His voice is musical.
Yeah. I know what he's talking about. And he's right. I can't argue with him there either.
I love the show. If you really sort of research and read the story it's supposed to tell,
there is endless articles about both the technical and story side of the show that if you haven't read, even if you don't enjoy the show like me, they're still absolutely fascinating. And it was who is it? It's Dorsey, this show?
I think so. You sort of gain a new appreciation for the show once you read that and read the story that Reflections of Earth is supposed to tell, like the creation of the Earth, the chaos, all that kind of stuff. I don't know what else to say. I'm just going to keep gushing like Jason
He's
has.
He's just falling asleep listening to the middle portion of the show right now.
Or grabbing a pretzel.
Either one.
Yes, it is a built-in intermission, which I love.
I don't mind the quiet, quote unquote, quiet portion.
Look,
but
a horse running on a globe.
There it is again.
Spectacular.
Thank you, Statler and Waldorf.
Probably not. Forget it.
I don't know what else to say. Everything's already been said by Jason and Zach. It's my favorite nighttime show. Until I see World of Color in July, of course.
Yes, of course. But of course, World of Color does have a 11-year advantage, which we should bring up, even though it is better. I will say, this is probably going to surprise people. I have this lower than the listeners. I have this at number 29.
Wow, for you that surprises me.
I know it does, and the reasoning is I can even though I don't really like it, I can understand the historical importance. Number one, it is one of the longest running untouched, and again, the early Fantasy in the Sky is not well documented, so we don't really know when they changed it, because it was changed multiple times along, you know, its 20 something year run or 30 something year run, whatever it was. But Illumination's Reflections of Earth has now gone completely unchanged since 1999, which is pretty amazing. I can't recall a show that's gone that long without even a scene change. And again, it's still every night. It's not empty. So I think with the score...
I mean, you have a point with the fact that it hasn't changed at all. Just refurbishments, which have upgraded some things, but it really hasn't changed at all.
Yeah. And I mean, the technical innovations of the show are amazing. Some of the things, the laser, you know, they did things with lasers that hadn't been done yet. And again, a lot of crazy stuff that a lot of other shows have borrowed since then, which says a lot. Regardless what I think of the middle section that probably could have been executed a lot better, the portions that are good are exceptional, and the other portions are okay, but everything, with the exception of that middle portion, it is one of the heights of Imagineering for nighttime entertainment. Mm-hmm. And everyone's stunned that Tom said that.
Yeah, I'm just... For the amount of times I've heard you go off on the show... I can't believe you don't have this at, like, number 41.
Nope. I have it ahead of Rock and Roller Coaster, which we've had in here. What other things have we mentioned? I have it ahead of Big Thunder, which we just talked about. I have it ahead of the Epcot 25th, ahead of...
Well, you weren't at the Epcot 25th.
I was not, but I think even if I was, I would have it somewhere in that range, as far as overall historical. And it's one behind the Haunted Mansion refurbishment for me, so... it's in good company.
It really is. That surprises me.
All right. Well, we've covered our three moments for this evening. Next time, we'll come back and count down more of the 40 biggest moments in the history of Walt Disney World.
This presentation of the 40 biggest moments in the history of Walt Disney World was brought to you by WDW Celebrations Project XL, The World at 40. This fan event celebrating the 40th anniversary of Walt Disney World is taking place September 29th through October 2nd and is an opportunity for you to gather with fellow fans and celebrate this incredible milestone. For more information on this event, please visit wdwcelebrations.com.
Now I will raise the safety bar. And a ghost will follow you home.
If you would like to join our jamboree, there's a simple rule that's compulsory. Mortals pay a token fee. Rest in peace, the haunting's free. So hurry back, we would like your company.
Well, ladies and gentlemen, it looks like that is going to do it for episode 185 of the WDW News Today podcast. As always, I'd like to thank you for tuning in. You make the show possible and worth producing each and every week. And I know, according to our statistics, at least, we have a fair amount of listeners over in Japan. We just want to let you know that our prayers are with you. Probably not listening to the show right now. I really can't blame you. But hopefully all is going well for you. And actually, we're going to be doing a little something in the next week or so. It's still coming together at this time. I'm heading up apparently a charity show that most of the Disney online community is getting together to do to raise some money, most likely for the Red Cross to help aid those affected by the disasters in Japan over the last week. So stay tuned. I'll have more information on that. Looking forward to helping out that really great cause in the next week or so. It's now time for the big finish, giving you all the useful information you'll need to know in the coming week. First of all, to contact us here at the show with any questions, suggestions, comments, or concerns, you can email us at wdwnewstoday@gmail.com or leave us a voicemail message at 206-666-2982. If you have not done so already, please leave us a review on iTunes. It's a great way to let others know about the show. Be sure to visit the new and improved wdwnt.com to connect to our entire network of Disney-inspired websites and podcasts. Again, that's wdwnt.com. Also, don't forget to visit our forums to vote for upcoming segments. Do that at wdwnewstoday.com/forums, F-O-R-U-M-S. Don't forget to follow us on Twitter at twitter.com/WDWNT or at WDWNT. And as well, you can make your friend on Facebook. That's facebook.com/WDWNT. And our fan page is at facebook.com/WDWNT network. Coming up this week on my talk show, the March 15th edition is a best of on See You Relate with Tom Corliss, a best of / behind the scenes show. We're putting together. That'll air again 11 p.m. on March the 15th and replay every night at that time. And we return with a new live episode on March 22nd at WDWNTunes.com. Do not miss See You Relate, a great program we're putting on every week. And replays nightly at 11 p.m. and 2 a.m. Eastern time. So hopefully most of you in most time zones can enjoy it. Coming up on next week's show, we have your Walt Disney World Resort news and rumor report. And I think we're going to have some pretty exciting live audio. As I'm recording, I'm getting ready to head down to Walt Disney World for 3 days to cover some interesting new stuff that I know we'll definitely have for you next week, but I can't talk about it just yet, but should be fun stuff. Since I just previewed next week's show, that means that this week's show is officially over, and I can end it with the corniest catchphrase in all of podcasting. That's going to do it for this week. See you all next week. See ya real soon!
WDW News Today podcasters, this is Big Brian of the Disneyland News Today podcast, and I was just listening to your dining discussion on the east half of Epcot, and at some point the subject of deep-fried candy bars came up, and I just wanted to say that you actually can get this on WDW property. For one place I know of is at Cooks of Dublin, the counter service side of Raglan Road. So just thought I'd share that WW connection, because I think when it came up in the dining discussion, it wasn't necessarily tied to WW. It was kind of a tangent. So just thought I'd share that with you, that there is a WW connection there. Keep up the great work, and enjoy the podcast. Bye for now.
Thank you for listening to the WDW News Today podcast. Be sure to tune in again next week as we continue to bridge the gap between you and the world. Also, don't forget to visit the entire WDWNT network online at WDWNT.com. This is Brian Summers saying goodnight and have a pleasant tomorrow.